This is Brian Cambria with news for the KVNF listening area Tuesday, November 27th, 2012. The search for Dylan Redwine continued yesterday as scuba divers from New Mexico State Police searched Vallecito Lake in response to alerts from canine dogs along the shore. In addition, three different boats with four different sonar systems scanned much of the lake. According to the La Plata County Sheriff, yesterday's search yielded nothing out of the ordinary. Barring new information, no additional search of the lake is planned. However, a joint team of investigators with the La Plata County Sheriff's Office and FBI agents are continuing their investigation. Dylan has been missing since November 19th. A Hotchkiss-based timber firm will be removing beetle-killed trees in the White River National Forest to burn for electricity. West Range Reclamation landed an $8.6 million Forest Service contract to remove several species of pine and fir that are susceptible to insect and disease infestations. West Range has partnered with Eagle Valley Clean Energy, who is planning an 11.5-megawatt power plant in Gypsum. The power plant will burn woody biomass, dead and small trees, removed from the forest. The electricity generated from the plant will go to Holy Cross Energy. This is one of two such projects from the U.S. Department of Agriculture designed to address fuel reduction and the bark beetle infestation in the Rocky Mountain region. The contracts will treat a minimum of 20,000 acres in the Medicine Bow Route and the White River National Forests in southern Wyoming and northern Colorado. The Forest Service is focused on prioritizing hazardous tree removal and reducing risks to infrastructure such as power lines, residences, and ski areas as beetle kill response activities move forward. According to the Forest Service, roughly 70 to 80% of the mature trees in these two forests have been killed to date. Bark beetles flourish with warm, dry weather, which makes 2012 the perfect year for them to take advantage of weakened pine trees. But this year's record-setting warm, dry weather made for a surprise bumper crop among fruit tree farmers in the North Fork Valley. For IC Change and KVNF, Julia Kumari-Drapkin takes a look at what changes in this year's growing season boosted the bumper.
Back in early August, Paonia fruit farmer Jeff Schwartz whistled as he worked with his team of pickers. There was plenty to be happy about in his orchards.
These are perfect right now. These are oxheart blood plums.
Jeff broke out his pocket knife and sliced into the sweet, purple-hearted fruit.
Pick it. Definitely pick that tree.
This was the pinnacle of the harvest. Everything from cantaloupes to peppers was coming in. And timing when to pick is Jeff's last critical decision in the season.
So you grow the fruit all year. You tend to it. You take care of it. You water it. You mow it. You weed it. You fertilize it. You really take care of it. And only thing you're doing that for is this one moment. This is the moment that you've spent the whole year on. You don't want to blow it.
And in retrospect, the whole agricultural year felt like it could have been blown at every turn. The first time I met Jeff Schwartz in early April, he was lighting fires under his cherry and apricot trees because they were blooming 3 weeks early. A late spring frost could have devastated the crop, but it didn't. Then came the early summer drought. But by the end of August, every crop in Jeff's field had not only survived the weird weather, every one of them had thrived, not just cherries and apricots.
All varieties of all fruits, so all the plums, all the types of apples, all the peaches, all of it, are bumper.
And by bumper, Jeff means both super tasty and super sized, and the superlatives just keep going.
Our tomatoes are twice as big. The harvest is early. The harvest is bigger because it's been growing more.
But why so much growing success after a year that, on the onset, seemed so stressful? Well, Jeff has one theory, maybe two. He says that incredibly warm nights all spring and summer made the fall harvest a 1-in-100-year crop.
So I think, I don't know this, but I think if your nights are staying above 60 degrees, rather than stopping when it gets cold and just kind of hunkering down until the morning, I think, I can tell we've had active growth for 24 hours.
Let's see, spring and summer. Okay.
To check out Jeff's theories, several scientists had to weigh in.
To confirm, okay.
Ken Kunkel studies climate variability at the National Climate Data Center in Asheville, North Carolina.
So, yeah, in one sense, he's right. That it is maybe a 1 in 100 year. Actually, we haven't seen anything higher in the last 117 years.
The spring and summer of 2012 saw the warmest ever nighttime minimum temperatures across the whole United States on record.
And our period of record goes back to 1895. This is national. There can always be regional differences.
Getting a handle on those regional differences requires a visit to the Western Colorado Research Center on Orchard Mesa in Grand Junction. The experts on horticulture there display quite a few regional differences themselves.
I'm from Nepal.
From Chile.
Germany. Okay. And we have someone from Nebraska, but we keep him in the basement. He's downstairs.
But when it comes to the record fruit harvests in Western Colorado, all the scientists here agree.
Jeff, probably the higher quality of the crops this year was due to the longer growing season and not the high temperatures during night.
That's Amaya Atucha, a fruit specialist from Chile. She says trees produce carbohydrates during the day when the sun and photosynthesis is taking place. But during the night, when there's no light, trees, like all living organisms, respire.
So what they do is they consume part of those carbohydrates that they produce during the day. When the night temperatures are higher, what happens is that they consume more carbohydrates than if the temperatures were lower.
Which means those balmy nights aren't helping the fruit grow. Amaya says that's why New Zealand is famous for apple harvests, the sunny hot days and the cold, cold nights. But still, low evening temperatures are indicative of an extended growing season.
2012 has been the second warmest year on record that we have here at the station, in growing degree days.
That's the German, Horst Kaspari, Colorado's state expert on grapes. Growing degree days, he says, are a back-of-the-envelope estimate of photosynthesis and plant growth. And May, June, July, and August all had temperatures above normal.
So the whole plant process was faster. We had an early harvest and we had a short harvest because everything got bunched together.
With the extended growing season, harvests for fruits and vegetables came in anywhere from 2 to 3 weeks earlier than normal. But according to Horst, if you look at the last 50 years of records at the Orchard Mesa Station, this new growing season is becoming the new normal.
We have our last frost in spring about 1 week earlier, and our first fall frost about 10 days later. We gained something like almost 3 weeks of frost-free season from 64 to 2012. Does that constitute global warming or a blip in something? I don't know. It's just an observation. I know that we now have more growing season and we have more warmth than we had in the 60s.
Climate change can bring opportunities as well as challenges for farmers.
David Wolf studies climate change and fruit trees at Cornell University in New York. He says Jeff's bumper crop experience aligns precisely with what he's seeing with fruit growers worldwide. In a warming world, Wolf says, it's access to irrigation water that makes all the world of difference.
If you have the irrigation capacity with the warmer temperatures and longer growing seasons we're seeing, you can get bigger yields. So that's what we're seeing in some parts of the world is those with irrigation are getting bumper crops and those and partly due to longer growing seasons, and those without it are getting horrible yields, worse than they've ever seen.
Wolf says he believes farmers could adapt to gradual shifts in the growing season, but unfortunately, that's not what appears to be happening. Winter in particular appears to swing between extremes, setting the stage for both the spring growing season and irrigation supplies.
And one winter it's really warm and another one's really cold. That kind of is what scares me. We're really the first generation of farmers ever who can't rely on the historical weather records for our area to tell us, you know, what to plant, how to grow it, and all of that.
Like many Western Colorado farmers, Jeff Schwartz says every year is a different year and another opportunity to learn.
You feel like you learn almost a lifetime of information in a season.
As for this year's lesson, Jeff says,
in a bumper season, in a bumper crop with fruit on all the different trees, what I learned is that there's no question where your priority focus, both in your head and your time, has to be.
And the weather continues to be dry in Colorado. A lack of snow is keeping skiers off much of Aspen Mountain and Snowmass after the resort opened on Thanksgiving Day. From Aspen Public Radio, Luke Runyon reports.
Snowmaking machines have been cranking overnight on the two mountains, but they can only do so much, and Mother Nature refuses to cooperate. Minimal snowfall and warm temperatures have left little terrain open for skiing and snowboarding.
We're in the business that's weather reliant. There are a lot of things like this, and you make do.
That's Aspen Skiing Company spokesman Jeff Hanley. Making do at this point means only opening runs where the ski area can make snow. Grass and rocks are poking through the section solely reliant on natural snowfall. The resort's been forced to shut down its gondola during the week. Hanley says dozens of workers are blasting the slopes with man-made snow and driving snowcats at night to keep it fresh.
You open what you can open. You work around the clock to make it the best product you can. And you go out and you enjoy it. And, you know, if there's anyone who's unhappy with that, then they should stay off the hill and keep their remarks to themselves.
Opening dates for the resort's other two ski mountains are fast approaching with no relief in the forecast. Sunny skies dominate the foreseeable future. Aspen Snowmass isn't alone. Most other Colorado ski areas open now are limited and feverishly making new snow. I'm Luke Runyon.
Aurora police will no longer target people for small-scale marijuana offenses and will dismiss all such pending prosecutions. The Denver Post reports that according to Aurora Police Chief Dan Oates, quote, a municipal prosecutor is not likely to be able to obtain convictions for activity which will become lawful as early as December when the governor certifies the election, end quote. Amendment 64, which voters approved on November 6th, legalizes small amounts of recreational marijuana. The measure is set to go into effect 30 days after votes are certified following the election. Still, the Post reports that in Arapahoe County, where much of Aurora is located, the 18th Judicial District is still prosecuting such offenses until the new law goes into effect. Other law enforcement districts around the state are also grappling with how to handle the new law. 2 weeks ago, officials in Denver and Boulder announced they would no longer charge those over the age of 21 for possession of less than an ounce of marijuana. Under Amendment 64, which passed with more than 54% support statewide, adults can lawfully possess up to an ounce of marijuana and grow up to six plants. Norwood will soon have a new, if controversial, cell tower. The Watch reports that San Miguel County Commissioners have approved Mercury Tower's permit to construct a nearly 200-foot tower just north of the Norwood Schools. Commissioners Art Goodtimes and Elaine Fisher voted to approve the tower, while Commissioner Joan May dissented. The Watch reports that the decision follows a hearing where much of the discussion focused on alternative sites for the tower. County Planning Director Mike Rozicki told the Watch that it was ultimately agreed that, given the timing of the process and the lack of other proven alternative sites, the property near the schools was the best site, despite concerns over its scenic quality. Rozicki told the Watch that this tower's approval could lead to further regulations regarding communication towers in the future. And finally, the westbound Twin Tunnel on Interstate 70 near Idaho Springs will be entirely closed overnight this week to install rockfall fencing above the highway. Starting last night and continuing through Friday morning, eastbound and westbound traffic will be reduced to a single lane through the eastbound tunnel from 7 p.m. until 7 a.m. Traffic preparations start at 6 p.m. When I-70 is reduced to a single lane, the speed limit will be reduced and wide vehicles restricted to 11 feet or less. For more information, visit cotrip.org. That's the Colorado Department of Transportation's website, www.cotrip.org. Thus concludes the newscast. For KVNF News, I'm Brian Cambria.